Welcome to the Deep Dive, the place where we cut through the noise and get straight to the insights you need. If you've ever tried to make sense of market movements, you know the core challenge. It's just information overload, right? You've got all these technical analysis tools, often screaming conflicting signals. It feels like trying to navigate fog with, I don't know, a dozen different maps.
That's a great analogy. And it's exactly why momentum indicators are, well, so crucial. They're meant to help us figure out the speed, the strength of price moves. And one of the big ones, probably the most well-known, is MACD, Moving Average Convergence Divergence.
Right, MACD. It's been around forever. Seems like everyone uses it.
It has, and for good reason. It's a staple.
Sure, it's powerful, no doubt. But here's the rub, isn't there? Even MACD, as trusted as it is, seems to have some pretty big shortcomings. I hear it can give signals that are misleading or maybe just too late to be really useful.
That's it, exactly. Think about comparing the speed of an old car to a new one just by looking at the top number on the speedometer. You're not accounting for engine changes, road conditions. It's kind of like that with classic MED. The raw number doesn't tell the whole story.
Okay, so that's what we're diving into today then, the problems with these classic indicators.
Precisely. Our mission today is to really unpack those limitations and then introduce you to something quite innovative. It's called the MCDV. It's a volatility normalized momentum indicator. And the idea is it fixes those old problems and really opens up new ways to understand market dynamics. And this whole discussion, it's based on some fantastic research by Alex Spiroglou. His work on this actually won him some major awards, like the Founders Award from NAAM and the Charles H. Dow Award from the CMTA. So really groundbreaking stuff.
All right, let's get into it. Starting with those traditional indicators, you mentioned there are kind of two main camps.
That's right, broadly speaking. Price-based momentum tools usually fall into, well, two groups. First, you have your range-bound oscillators. Think RSI, stochastics, Williams-Pursard, those kinds of things. They operate within a fixed range, usually 0 to 100.
Okay, 0 to 100, that sounds good, right? Fixed range, objective readings, makes comparisons easy.
It does have advantages, yes. The fixed range gives you objective levels, and you can compare them directly across different stocks or markets. That's a plus.
But I feel a but coming. I've heard about this pegging problem. What's that about?
Ah, yes. That's the downside of the fixed range. During strong, extended trends, these indicators can hit the top, say 100, or the bottom, 0, and just stay there. They get pegged at those extreme overbought or oversold levels.
Like a speedometer stuck at the max speed, even if the trend is still accelerating.
Exactly. It's pegged, giving you a reading, but it's totally useless for gauging the current momentum or when things might turn. It leads to tons of false signals, or at least a lot of confusion. Some traders even use overbought readings as a sign of more strength to come, which is counterintuitive.
So they're not really measuring momentum anymore at that point.
You could argue that, yeah. They become more like range identification tools. They tell you you're in an extreme zone, but not much about the force behind the move.
Okay, that's definitely a problem.
Yeah.
So if those have issues, let's turn back to the classic MACD, the one everyone knows. What did Spiroglou identify as his main flaws?
Well, the first big one he pointed out is time instability. See, traditional MACD is an absolute price indicator. It uses the raw price to calculate its averages. And crucially, the output isn't normalized. What that means, practically, is that a MACD reading from today isn't really comparable to one from, say, 20 years ago for the same stock or index.
Okay, hang on. Give us an example of that. Time instability. How does that play out?
Sure. Let's take the S&P 500. Back between, say, 1957 and 1971, its highest MACD reading was about 1.56. Now, fast forward to 2019, 2021, the maximum MACD read jumped to 86.31.
Whoa, 86 versus 1.5. So was momentum like 50 times stronger recently?
Not necessarily. That's the point. It's largely because the absolute price level of the S&P 500 is just so much higher now. The MACD value gets inflated along with the price. So comparing those raw numbers across decades, it's misleading.
Got it. So if it's not stable over time for one asset, I'm guessing it's also tough to compare MACD between different assets like S&P versus gold or currencies.
Exactly. That's limitation number two, cross-market incomparability. MACD values just look totally different across various markets because their prices are different. You might see the S&P 500 MACD at, say, 65, but the euro currency MACD might be narrowed at 0.00070.
Okay, yeah, those numbers are worlds apart.
Right. And that difference tells you nothing objective about which market has stronger momentum. It's just reflecting the different price scales. You simply can't use those raw MACD numbers to compare momentum strength apples to apples across markets.
which is different from something like RSI you mentioned.
Yes, RSI being range bound is directly comparable. An RSI of 80 means roughly the same thing contextually, whether you're looking at Apple stock or oil futures. MEXI doesn't have that.
Okay, so no time stability, no cross-market comparability.
Mm.
That must lead to the third problem then.
Yeah.
Which is?
Lack of objective scaling. If you can't compare values reliably across time or across markets,
then how do you even define what high or low momentum actually is?
Precisely. There's no objective standardized way to say, okay, a MACD reading above X is strong, or below Y is weak, or this level means overbought. It's all relative to that specific asset at that specific time. You lack a universal framework.
Makes sense. Oh. And the last two issues have to do with the MACD signal line. Is that right?
They do. Limitation number four is signal line inaccuracy. This crops up especially in low momentum markets, you know, when things are choppy or range bound. The MACD line itself tends to hug the zero line and its own signal line really closely.
With lots of little crossings back and forth.
Exactly. You get frequent but ultimately unreliable signal line crossovers, loads of false signals. It can really chop up a trend following approach. It's kind of an Achilles heel in those conditions.
Okay, unreliable signals in choppy markets. And the fifth limitation, something about timing.
Yes, signal line timing. This one hits you hard during sharp reversals. Think V-shaped bottoms or tops. When you've had a strong trend, the MACD line pulls far away from its signal line. Then the market snaps back quickly. But because the signal line is an average, it lags. It takes time to catch up and generate that crossover signal.
So the signal eventually points the right way, but it's late.
Often significantly late, you miss a big piece of the reversal move waiting for that crossover.
Wow. Can you give us a real-world example of that delay?
Sure. A classic one is the S&P 500 bottom back on February 9th, 2018. The index hit 232.69, but the standard MACD crossover signal. It didn't happen until February 23rd when the S&P was already up at 2747.30.
Let me get this straight. The signal came almost 8.5% after the actual bottom.
Astonishing, right? 8.47% later. You basically miss the initial, often sharpest part of the recovery, like missing the bus, as you said. You know where it's headed, but you're standing at the stop.
Okay, those five limitations paint a pretty clear picture of the problems. Now, before Spiro Glue's MACDV, did anyone else try to fix MACD? You mentioned PPO.
Yes, the percentage price oscillator, or PPO, was definitely an attempt. The PPO construction takes the MACD calculation but expresses the result as a percentage of the underlying price, then multiplies by 100. And it does help. It addresses the time and cross-market comparability issues, to a degree. It gives the readings more context.
Okay, so PPO is better but not perfect. What was the PPO's remaining flaw?
It still struggled with that objective scaling problem. For example, a PPO reading of, say, 0.5% might indicate a really strong trend for something like the German Bund. But that same 0.5% PPO on the S&P 500, that could mean it's barely trending, almost range bound.
Ah, so high momentum was still relative to the specific asset. No universal measure.
Exactly. You still didn't have a truly universal definition of momentum strength that worked everywhere.
And that's the gap Alex Spiroglou aimed to fill with the game changer, MACD. So what's the secret sauce? What did he do differently?
It's actually quite elegant. Instead of dividing the MED by the absolute price, like PPO does, he divided it by the average true range, the ATR.
ATR. That's a measure of volatility, right?
Precisely. ATR measures the typical trading range or volatility. Then he multiplies by 100. So MACD is MACD divided by volatility, essentially.
Okay, normalizing by volatility instead of price.
Yeah.
How does that simple change fix those five big limitations we talked about? Let's start with the first one, time stability.
It makes a world of difference. First, time stability. Because it's volatility adjusted, MACD-V readings are comparable over time for the same asset. Take the S&P 500 again from 1975 to 2021. The MACD-V consistently oscillates within a predictable range. About 95% of all its readings fall between negative 150 and plus 150. Those huge historical discrepancies we saw with regular MACD-D, gone. Decades apart comparisons are now meaningful.
That's huge for backtesting and historical perspective. Okay, what about cross-market comparability? Does it work across totally different markets, like stocks versus bonds versus commodities?
Yes, it truly does. This is maybe the most powerful part. MACD-V values are genuinely comparable across completely different securities. Think about the S&P 500, the German Bund, natural gas futures, vastly different beasts in terms of price and volatility. Yet they all show similar exhaustion levels on the MACD-D. Those extreme readings above 150 or below negative 150, where momentum is stretched about 1.5 times its average volatility, they occur only only about 5% of the time consistently across all these diverse markets.
Wow. So it creates like a common language for momentum.
Exactly. A universal momentum language. That's what MACEDV provides. We've never really had that before.
A universal language. Okay. That leads right into advantage number three. The Momentum Lifecycle Roadmap Objective Scaling. Tell us about this roadmap.
Right. Since MACEDV is comparable everywhere, we can finally build an objective numbers-based framework. This framework defines momentum's direction bullish or bearish and its strength low, high, even truly overbought or oversold. And importantly, it avoids that pegging problem we saw with RSI and stochastics. Yeah. It doesn't get stuck.
A roadmap for momentum. I love that idea. Can you walk us through the different stages? You said there are eight?
Yep. Eight states based on the MEV value itself and whether it's above or below its signal line, which is usually a 9-period EMA. First, you have the extreme state, risk. That's when MACEDV is above plus 150 or below Mannikin's 150. Momentum is really stretched here, more than 1.5 times typical volatility. Historically, these levels aren't sustainable for long, only happens about 5% of the time.
Okay, wish zone. Got it. What's next?
Then the strong directional states. Rallying is when MACEDV is between 50 and 150 and it's above its signal line. Strong upward momentum. Reversing is the opposite. MACEDV between Magadus 150 and Magad 50 and below its signal line. Strong downward momentum. Together, these two account for maybe 35-40% of market time.
All right. Strong trends covered. What about when things are quiet?
That's the ranging state. MACEDV is between Magad 50 and plus 50. This is where the market spends a lot of its time, actually, around 45-50%. Momentum is low. There's no strong conviction. Price usually just consolidates or chops around.
Okay, that's a big chunk of time. And the last few states are transitions.
Exactly. Transition states. Retracing is when MACEDV is still in that strong positive zone, 50 to 150, but has dipped below its signal line. This often indicates a pullback within an uptrend or maybe the start of a reversal. And rebounding is the mirror image. MACEDV is in the strong negative zone, negative 150 to negative 50, but has popped above its signal line. Could be a bounce in a downtrend or an emerging bottom.
That is incredibly detailed. A much richer picture than just crossing bullish. And you mentioned the data backs this up across markets. These ranges hold.
They really do. Looking at decades of S&P data, that risk zone is rare, about 5%. Ranging is common almost half the time. Strong trends fill the rest. But the amazing part is you run the numbers on the German Bund or on natural gas markets with totally different personalities. And you see roughly the same percentages falling into these MACEDV buckets. It's remarkable consistency. It gives us that unified definition of momentum states, fast, slow, overbought, oversold. That just wasn't possible before.
Okay, so we have this universal language. How do we apply it? Can we make it even more powerful by adding filters, like trend filters?
Yes, absolutely. A simple but effective approach is trend regime filter version 1. Just look at MACEDV behavior based on whether the price is above or below its 200-day exponential moving average, the 200 EMA. So in a bullish stage, price is above the 200 EMA, you find something interesting. Pretty much 100% of those extreme risk readings above plus 150 happen when you're already above the 200 EMA, and you basically see zero occurrences of the extreme low readings below Magus 150.
So in a bull market, momentum doesn't tend to completely collapse below Magus 150 on the XEV.
Rarely, if ever, while it stays above the 200 EMA. In fact, 99.4% of all MACEDV readings in that bullish stage are actually above MAGs of 100. It implies that a pullback in a bull market is very unlikely to push the MACEDV below NAGs 100 if that primary trend remains intact.
Fascinating. And I assume it's the mirror image in a bear market.
Exactly. Yeah. In a bearish stage price below the 200 EMA, all the extreme low risk readings, negative 150, happen here. And you get zero extreme high readings, plus 150. And similarly, 99.8% of the MACEDV readings stay below plus 100.
Suggesting a bear market rally probably won't push momentum beyond plus 100 if the price stays below the 200 EMA.
Precisely. And again, this behavior is consistent across the S&P, the Bund, natural gas, different markets, same general rules apply based on the trend regime.
That adds some serious context. What about adding swing filters, looking at price reversals?
Yeah, that's another layer. You can define swings, price reversals of a certain percentage and see how MACEV behaved at those turning points within the trend regimes. For the S&P 500, using a 3% swing definition, Spiroglou looked at over 650 swings since 1975. In the bullish stage, above the 200 EMA, nearly 60% of the swing highs happened when MACEDV was in that strong momentum rallying state, 50 to 150. And almost all those swing highs, 99.1%, occurred with MACEDV above the negative 100, consistent with what we saw earlier.
Okay, and the swing lows during that same bullish phase, where do they typically occur in terms of momentum?
The majority, about 72%, of swing lows in the bullish stage happened when MACD-V was in the weak momentum ranging state between 50 and negative 50. And again, nearly all of them, 99.7%, stayed above that MAG 100 MACD-V level. And of course, you'd use different swing percentages for different markets, maybe 1% for the less volatile bund, 5% for volatile natural gas to account for their nature. But the principle is the same.
It gives you a profile of typical momentum behavior at tops and bottoms within a trend. Very cool. And I gather Sparrow Blue even developed a more complex trend regime filter V.2 with 6 stages. So they get even more specific.
It does. It breaks the trend down further using both the 50-day and 200-day EMAs. For example, stage 2 might be price 50 EMA, 200 EMA, a strong established uptrend. Here, 99.8% of MACD-V readings stay between 150 and negative 50. Very defined behavior. Or stage 3, price dips below the 50 EMA but stays above the 200 EMA, maybe a pullback. In this stage, over 72% of readings fall into that neutral ranging zone, negative 50 to 50. So yes, it provides incredibly granular context for interpreting the MACD-V reading depending on the precise market phase.
This really does feel like teaching old tools new tricks. Can this whole volatility normalization idea be applied to other indicators besides MACD?
Oh, absolutely. The core concept is broadly applicable. It can significantly boost the usefulness of many other indicators. Take Linda Bradford Rashke's 310 oscillator. She calls it the sardine, which is memorable.
The Crichton oscillator, okay.
It can volatility normalize it. The formula becomes the difference between the 3-period and 10-period EMAs divided by the 10-period ATR. And guess what? The resulting normalized data behaves very similarly to MACD-V. It becomes objectively readable, comparable.
Interesting. Are there others?
Yeah. The research suggests similar enhancements can be made to systems like the Alex Elder Impulse System or the Dukas Diamond Refine System. Basically, adding volatility normalization injects objectivity and comparability into tools that might have been more subjective before.
So with all this objective framework, can you actually build trading strategies around it? I think you mentioned something called the 70 and 77 system earlier.
Yes, that serves as a really interesting example, purely inspirational, mind you, of how these objective MACD-V rules can be used. It was a simple, long-only system tested on DAX futures. The rule was, buy one contract when MACD-V crosses above 70. Then there were specific exit rules. Take profit at 2.85% or exit after 15 days if it's profitable but hasn't hit the target, or just exit after 77 days regardless.
Okay, simple rules based on an objective MACD-V level. How did it perform historically on the DAX?
Well, over the period 1991 to 2021, starting with a hypothetical $100,000, the backtest showed a net profit of over $410,000. And the win rate was quite high, around 85.9% profitable trades out of 234. The profit factor was 2.58. Pretty solid numbers.
Wow, those are impressive results. But I sense a big asterisk coming.
A very big one. It's crucial to understand this is not presented as a ready-to-trade system. Absolutely not. It's purely illustrative. It's meant to inspire further research and show the potential of building strategies using objective, volatility-normalized momentum rules like those derived from MACD-V.
Okay, inspiration, not recommendation. Oh. Got it. So for listeners who are intrigued, how can they start applying this research practically? Is there a tool available?
Yes, the research led to the development of practical tools like the MACD-V screener. Its main goal is to help you identify stocks or whatever assets you follow that have seen recent shifts in momentum direction, but crucially, within the context of the MACD-V framework.
So what does the screener actually show you? What are its key features?
Well, it flags assets where the MACD-V has crossed its signal line up or down within the last 5 trading days. But it doesn't just say crossed up. It tells you the current momentum state using Sparrow Blue's roadmap. So you might see, you know, MSFT 153.2 risk, or GOG 75.4 rallying, or IBM negative 45.1 ranging.
Ah, so it gives you the number and the state. Risk, rallying, ranging.
Yeah.
That's much more informative than just a crossover.
Exactly. It provides that vital context immediately. And it usually separates the results into upward momentum shifts and downward shifts for clarity.
And its main purpose is education, helping interpretation.
Precisely. Its primary role is educational, to help you interpret these momentum states objectively, provide context. It is absolutely not designed to give buy or sell signals directly. That's key. And because the framework is universal, it works the same whether you're looking at UK stocks in pence, US stocks in dollars, futures, currencies, doesn't matter.
Okay, universal application, educational focus. What are the important caveats people need to keep in mind if they use a tool like this?
Super important caveats. It's not a trading system. It's not fundamental analysis. Past performance shown by the framework doesn't guarantee future results, obviously. And it's generally best suited for swing trading or intermediate term analysis. Probably not ideal for very fast day trading or very long-term buy and hold investing. The bottom line is, it's a tool to enhance your judgment with objective momentum intelligence. It doesn't replace your own thinking or other forms of analysis.
Right. It's adding a layer of objective insight, not a magic bullet. So wrapping this up, we started by talking about that feeling of information overload, the confusing signals from traditional tools like MACD. But through Alex Spiroglou's research, we've uncovered this really powerful refinement, the MACD V.
Yeah, the key takeaway is this concept of a universal momentum language. MACD V gives us objective, comparable insights across different markets, across different time periods. It finally puts momentum readings into a meaningful, consistent context. It really transforms that classic tool.
And for you, the listener, really grasping how momentum behaves independent of the price scale or the specific market, that's a huge advantage. It's a shortcut to being truly well-informed. It helps you move beyond just asking what an indicator is saying to really understanding why it's saying it, based on its current state in that momentum life cycle.
Exactly. So maybe the thought to leave you with is this. Knowing that momentum across all these wildly different markets seems to follow these consistent, predictable life cycles, these objective states, how might that fundamentally change the way you approach analyzing any new market or asset you encounter? Moving beyond just the indicators level to understanding the why behind its current state and what that might imply next.